Uhuru. You should come back with Uhuru. Tanzania, mid-60s. Tanzania had just become independent from Great Britain. And the cry was, Uhuru, freedom. What they were celebrating, of course, was political independence, not freedom, because political independence and freedom don't necessarily go together. Witness North Korea. What freedom, therefore, means different things in different contexts. And what I want to address this morning is the concept of freedom as it applies to Christian people. The reading that in Galatians, where Paul talks about freedom, for freedom Christ has set us free, don't go back to the yoke of slavery. Paul develops it in two ways. One about freedom in church practice, and the other about freedom from as opposed to license, loose living, and debauchery. He says, well, freedom doesn't allow us to go into debauchery. But I want to set that aside and look at freedom from the perspective of Christian belief and society. First of all, I want to start what does gospel freedom mean? Paul's introduces himself in Romans by saying he's a slave of Jesus Christ. Now, is Paul conflicted? Is he free or is he a slave? And it's a question that often confronts them. In Roman times, a slave, the status of a slave depended on who your master was. You could be a servile drudge, abused and beaten, or you could be the steward of the house who managed the whole affairs of the master. You could be wealthy, you could even own your own slaves as a slave. So that slavery it was a term that covered a wide range of experience. Paul calls himself a slave of Jesus, but he has freedom within that thing. The only constraint is that we love one another. So Paul says, if you're called as a free person, you're a slave of Jesus Christ. If you're called to believe and you're a slave, you're a freed slave. So you can be both free and a slave at the same time. We have enormous freedom within the Christian faith, subject only to the constraint that we love one another. So freedom has two aspects. Oh, it's up there. We can be free from something and we can be free to do something. First of all, freedom from something. It's like the world is free from smallpox. That's an equivalent in the Christian faith is to be free from the law. And this is what Paul develops in Galatians. He was a Jewish in background, but he came to realise that coming to Jesus means that the law no longer has application. All the things that were set out in the Old Testament regarding food and clothing, dress, rituals, religious rituals, and all the other things that amount to religiosity, they were all gone. The death of Christ set people free from those sorts of observances. Jesus made it clear that what defiles us is not what we eat, but what comes out of us, what we say. So that anything of that kind is abolished. There's no virtue in coming to church. It doesn't do anything for you. It's what you do in church which matters. He takes this up in a case of circumcision. He says that circumcision, which was the defining observation of the Jewish faith, was all gone. If you keep anything like that, you have to keep the whole law. So we're not constrained in that way, and that's how Western society has developed. We don't observe that kind of restriction in the Christian church. The second thing that freedom brings is freedom to act in a way that's appropriate for the gospel. And that's why I've read that passage about the woman coming to Jesus. This was the last week of Jesus' life. It was triumphantly entered Jerusalem. He was followed by the crowds. He taught in the temple. There were great interest in what he was doing. And it was one evening when he was eating with in the home of Simon the leper when this woman confronted him. She entered the room, took out a jar of ointment, broke it and poured it all over his head. And it's interesting that he says later that wherever the gospel is preached, this story should be told. He was saying to his hearers, if you're going to write my biography, write a gospel, include this passage. So obviously it meant a lot to him. Now, this expensive cosmetic was placed on Jesus' head. She must have had a previous encounter with Jesus to do this. And she was determined to show her gratitude. And what gratitude it was. Her most expensive possession was wasted. It was cast away in a willful and profligate manner. She poured it out over his head. And some people scolded her. They said, what a waste. You could have sold it and given it to the poor or to CMS or something. And so they were indignant and offended. Now, what she'd done was rude and confronting in bad taste. She'd insulted a guest and embarrassed the host. So this is what she'd done. She'd crashed a private party, she'd confronted the guest of honour, and she'd poured goo on his head. And what was Jesus' response? He said, she's done something beautiful. He approved of a woman making a spectacle of herself. And he credits her with two accomplishments. First, she prepared his body for burial. Now, remember that Jesus' body was never... after his death, the women went to tend to the body and he'd gone. So it was the only time that anybody had honoured him in death in that way. And secondly, she did what she could. We don't know her background. We surmise that she lived in Bethany. And when Jesus was in town, it was her opportunity to get access to him. Because of the crowds in the day, she obviously had to do it when he was more isolated, alone at night, in a dinner party. So she seized the opportunity. So what's all this got to do with freedom? Well, Jesus approved of her flouting of convention and going beyond acceptable behaviour. See, societies construct fences to regulate relationships, and there are social institutions that we want to observe. And some can be extremely confining. Some societies have very rigorous boundaries to behaviour. Even today, the Muslim chaplain to the hospital told me that he takes a female Christian chaplain with him when he visits a woman alone in a room, because in his society, a male doesn't be alone with a woman in private. So there are these sort of boundaries that exist in many societies. In Japan, the Jacksons say it's very difficult for Japanese people to become Christians because it means they're betraying the family and the necessity to honour the ancestors appropriately. So there are all these constraints that are put on people in how to behave in society, what's acceptable and what's not. What Jesus is saying here is this woman's unacceptable behaviour is gospel freedom. And there are many situations in the world today where it's difficult for Christians to practice their faith or people to turn to Christ because of pressures from the society. The gospel liberates us from these sorts of things. It allows us to exercise our faith in any situation. this is apparent earlier in the New Testament when Peter and John preached in the temple and the police arrested them and they were brought before the Sanhedrin and they said, who do we obey, God or man? There's a gospel freedom there to observe your Christian faith. We've enjoyed this in the West, but it's gradually changing, isn't it? The spirit of the age, the zeitgeist, has changed in our lifetimes as to what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, what Christians can do and what Christians can't do. The Markan passage, I believe, gives us the freedom to go across those boundaries and to do what is right in the name of God. Now, what is the test? Paul gives us the test here in Galatians chapter 5. Neither circumcision nor uncircumcision accounts for anything. The only thing that counts is faith working through love. And it says later, Paul says later in this passage, that the whole law is summed up in a single commandment, that you'll love your neighbour as yourself. So if we're motivated by love, we can express our faith by crossing the boundaries. And this is what is happening in our society today. The prominent case is that of Israel Folau, isn't it? What is permissible? Now, I think the gospel freedom allows him to do what he's done. Whether it's wise to do it in the situation, I don't know, because I don't know all the facts. But I believe that he has the right to do that, to follow his faith, working through love. The test is, did he do it out of love? I think that the young man that egged Fraser Anning did it out of contempt. So it's a matter of motivation, but the liberty is there and we need to maintain that liberty. I have here a booklet which is produced by Barnabas Fund, which outlines the idea of Christian liberty. It lists the legal situation, what's allowed in under common law in Australia. It gives some illustrations of things that are happening, and it also gives some idea of the way forward. Now, some of these are out on the table out there. I think it's well worth reading, and because we're confronting this situation more and more. To sum up, the woman did what she could. Now, we can do stuff ourselves. We can write to politicians. We can that's, I think, the principal way, to let politicians know what we feel. That I personally sense that our freedoms are under attack, and that we need to be active in this area. And I think we need to follow the woman's example and cut across a few boundaries to express our faith in love.